on this week's show, is technology adoption and construction stagnating? With Ronan Vengosh from Ignite. All right, Ronan, I'm excited that you risk sitting down with me for a special episode.
Yeah, well, I'm a risk taker. What am I going to say?
Well, your history says that we're going to see how risky we get today. We're probably going to ruffle a few feathers, but hopefully in the end, we're actually going to enlighten a few folks.
Sounds like a plan. Let's do it.
All right. Well, you guys know we're back on social media. We're all over the place, but check us out at youtube.com/@thecontentcrew and follow it for the shorts.
Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the Contech Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@thecontentcrew.com to learn more.
All right, we're back. Before we dive into it, Ronan, give everybody sort of a background of yourself and kind of where you are today and how you're supporting the construction industry.
Yeah, well, I'm SVP of Industry Practices here at Ignite. I've been with the company for about 10 years. And about 4 years ago, we started an AEC practice here in the company. This is a really big part of our business and an area that we're investing in very heavily. You know, further back in my career, and I don't like to admit it, I started out as a lawyer, but that's a bygone era. I've been, shall we say, non-practicing for the past 25 years. So everything's good, I hope.
You know, we've had reformed architects before, but I can't say we've had, well, reformed lawyers. I don't know that I'd call some of my other friends reformed lawyers as much as they've had new ventures. But yeah, you're my first really reformed lawyer.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a pleasure to be the first.
Well, and talk a little bit about, you've got a history on the technology side of things and sort of delivering solutions across different industries, which is one of the interesting reasons to, you know, sit down and talk to you and get a perspective.
Yeah. So actually, one of the things that we do here at Ignite is I run three separate practices. One, the biggest one is AEC. We also have a very fast growing practice in financial services and another one that's very innovative in life sciences. And interestingly, our services across these different industries, while they're fundamentally the same, we take our product and kind of customize it for the needs of each industry to just to make sure that we capture the use cases that each industry needs to focus on, right? So that's part of our strategy here in the company. As part of that, I speak to CIOs for a living, right? So I go around the trade circuit, I go to meetings, speak one-on-one with a lot of CIOs. And because of the different industries, I get very interesting perspectives that differ from company to company, from industry to industry, sometimes geographically different as well between the US and Europe and so forth. So it's a pretty interesting job to be in, I have to say.
Yeah, and it was one of the reasons that sparked us sitting down and wanting to talk. We ran into each other at Groundbreak last year and kind of I floated the idea by you of some of the research and things I've been doing on that CIO, CTO role and some of the technology roles and issues that we're experiencing. So some of you regular listeners will know that, you know, over the last 18 months, I've done a lot of research thanks to MCAA, NECA, SMACNA, and the MEP Innovations Group around sort of the growth and change in the industry and some of the problems. And, you know, that's where I kind of posed that to Ronan and we've been sitting and talking about it. And it's that outside industry experience. It's sitting down with CIOs in life sciences, in the AEC industry, but across the AEC and across geographies. And like you said, it's not just North America. It's not just America. You know, you have Europe and other areas of the world.
Middle East, Australia, all over the place. Yeah.
Yeah. So that worldview gives you the ability to sort of sit down and talk to me about, you know, we were talking pre-show some of the problems here. And, you know, so everybody listening in, if you didn't get a chance to be at MEP Innovations, this is pretty true, not only for these groups of trade organizations, but pretty much construction in general has seen a growth over the last 3 to 5 years that outpaces the past 20. And we're expecting over the next 5 for it to eclipse all of that. What does that mean? when I got on the stage at MVP Innovations, we had gotten some data, and we had, you know, tens of million dollar contractors that were now quarter of a billion, half of a billion. We had hundreds of millions that were now billions. And we had half a millions that were, you know, way into multiple billions. And that growth happened really, really quickly. And those organizations were, you know, mom and pop, family owned lifestyle businesses that now had to turn into enterprise organizations. And they have run into a number of problems along the way. So I wanted to sit down and, you know, I've been doing a lot of research around it. And I want to understand from you kind of your perspective on the changing needs for IT leadership and some of the unique challenges to construction, but also some of the things we could probably learn from those other industries.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty broad question, Jeff. So one of the things I'll say, like, as I look at all these different conversations that I've had across the industry, the way I look at IT in AEC is in two broad categories. I see some CIOs, some IT organizations as kind of taking the front seat, the driver's seat in terms of how they're leveraging technology to drive growth and innovation, competitive advantage. And I see a different group of folks that are mostly thinking about making sure that they're behind the scenes, making, you know, the lights go on and the phones go off and kind of making sure everything's sustained. So, you know, the first group are folks that are trying to kind of partner with the business, if you will, and lead the business down a path of, you know, higher profitability, faster growth. The second group is a group of folks that tend to be behind the scenes. As long as things are working well, they're not kind of in the primary set of operations, if you will, right? And one of the interesting things that I've seen is that companies can be successful either way. Like, it's not the one or the other that's kind of successful. What really makes the difference, I think, is the way that the IT organization partners with the business side of things, and whether kind of everybody's pulling in the same direction, whether kind of the processes are aligned, kind of the incentives are aligned, and the goals are aligned, right? That's kind of what makes a difference in those situations.
And you're right, it was purposefully broad, so we could sort of start it off. And you hit on those two areas. And what I've done in this research is we've kind of identified it as that classic IT. You know, that's the operational, that's the IT, the plumbing, the networking, the backups, the data, et cetera. And then you're talking about what we call construction technology that I think we here at the show kind of help coin that. But I would like to change that to operational technology. And they're two very different things, right? They have two very specific, different roles. They're both really important for the growth of your business because, you know, without the plumbing and the things connecting and talking to one another and gathering it, having operational technology doesn't really help you, and vice versa. Now, the interesting part of the rapid growth has been each of those groups growing without that partnership with the other and that understanding. So it's sort of been I'd call it a passion project, because unfortunately, the people who have suffered in this process are the leadership in the industry and the individuals coming up in the industry. So to give you guys a little bit of an idea of what I mean there is, like, how many of you in IT now report to a CFO? Well, that's probably the fault of at some point someone being in a leadership, you know, boardroom and talking about bits and bytes, backups and data deduplication, or if you're coming from the operational technology side, you're talking VR and AR and goggles and lasers and robots. And the leadership has a business to run. They have projects to deliver. They've got real uncertainty and risk in their lives. So that makes their eyes roll back in their head. Now, whose fault is that? It's twofold. We brought those people up so fast, we didn't teach them. And we didn't identify that we were bringing these people up, right? Both sides. So what does the leadership do? They say, you report to the CFO. I don't ever want to hear that in this room again. Make sure they stay under budget. And I've got other, you know, real business things to deal with. So you have that sort of real problem. And that's one of them. The other is, you know, we've let folks come up through the operational technology and not really expose them to the core talents of IT and what it means to be scalable, what it means to be secure, what it means to do those things, and vice versa. Like, IT doesn't understand all the time how we build things. So you have like this, nobody's fault, but this is the organizational structure. All of a sudden IT and is reporting to the CFO, and you have a innovation person that's off on their own that maybe reports to somebody or maybe just doesn't. So I want to break it down a little bit, because it's not fun to talk about organizational structure, but we kind of have to. So what are some of the tips, some of the things you've seen other industries or ours where they're successful do to solve those problems?
I think it all starts with having a clear mandate for what it is that you're trying to do. Right? Before you can do something successfully, you need to define what it is that you're trying to accomplish. Right? What are the goals? What are the metrics? How will you know if you're successful? Right? I mean, you can work all day, but if there's no agreement on what it is, what it means to be successful, then you're kind of wasting your time. Right? So I think that's number one. The second thing I'll say is that, you know, you brought up kind of these two, I guess, separate areas, one being the construction operational tech, one being kind of the traditional IT side of things. Well, in reality, for companies to be successful, these need to work together, right? And it's nearly impossible for a single person to kind of know both, because of the way, you know, the direction of careers and how people grow up in the industry and so forth. And it's all about kind of getting the right folks in the business to support the operation, right? So if you're, you know, a traditional IT person coming in from, you know, a networking background or whatnot, security background, whatever it is, having somebody there who grew up from the operational technology side of the house that you can rely on, that you trust, that will give you good advice, and that you can go to help formulate the strategy, and vice versa, right? If you're somebody that grew up on the construction technology side, maybe you grew up in VDC or whatnot, and you have no background in IT security, you probably want to have somebody who will be there to think about things like ransomware and redundancy and, you know, file management and all the rest of it, right? So it really is about kind of, first of all, what is it that you're trying to do? What is the goal of IT within the organization? And then secondly, making sure that you've got, you know, the right expertise around the table that covers the full range of the things that you're trying to achieve.
I mean, you kind of nailed it there with it's the begin with the end in mind, right? What is the goal? And what I like about what you said there is you didn't say which one had to be, you know, kind of leading, that it doesn't really matter. Whichever one's further along in their career, understands the business, or at least speaking business, can rely on the other. It's a symbiotic relationship. They need each other to be successful. For folks listening in, if you're like, how do I know which one I am? How many of you have had many, many pilot projects, yet none of them ever get to scale and penetrate the organization as a whole? You probably have CT or operational technology without IT, right? Because they probably failed to understand scalability and enterprise access and change management and rolling it out, right?
Oh, man, Jeff, now you hit it on the head. Like, adoption and scalability, that's the crux of the matter right there.
Right. And then if you're the opposite, if, you know, everything works from a, you know, everything's always up and online and going, but you're still using Excel spreadsheets and you're still, you know, struggling to capture the information, then you probably have overdone IT or IT without operational technology. Someone who really doesn't understand the business and moving yourself forward from that operations side of things. So the two need each other to be successful, but they're also both really powerful weapons when used together to advance your business. But you defined it. What's your goal? What do you want to do? I mean, too often we assume what a company might want to do. If you're a $250 million trade contractor, do you want to be a half a billion? Do you want to be a billion? A lot of you will say yes, just because you don't have an answer. What if you wanted to be a $250 million contractor, you know, trade contractor, but you just wanted to drive more profit? right? So where can you use technology and use innovation and use process improvement to reach that, right? You got to define that goal. And it's important because that's the other piece. Both of those two need to learn to work together, but they also then need to work with leadership. So what are some of the skills that an up-and-coming operational technologist or an up-and-coming IT can learn to communicate with their leadership?
Yeah, well, I mean, the biggest one is knowing how to talk in business outcomes, right? This is to your point earlier about talking about bits and bytes or you know, VR goggles or whatever. That rarely moves the needle for anybody, right? Like, how do you talk in business outcomes? And in fact, one of the things that we've learned here at Ignite is because we work with a lot of different, you know, types of teams. We've learned that some of the IT organizations don't know how to do that. And so we actually have a dedicated team, which we call our business value team, whose sole job it is to work with, you know, our customers that have, you know, looked at Ignite, think it's a good solution for their needs, meets the purpose of, or their targets that they're trying to achieve, but they don't know how to sell this internally, right? So how do you take kind of these amorphous benefits, translate them into business outcomes, into dollars, into productivity, and be able to communicate that information effectively, succinctly, in a way that makes sense, right? And putting that in front of the right people at the right time. So I'll say, like, you know, talking the right language, I think is critical, is a big component of being successful there.
And I really love that you guys built a business value team, because what you're also doing in that process is teaching.
Right? Yeah.
I don't want anybody in the operational technology or IT side to think that I'm not understanding your level of expertise and your knowledge. What I'm saying is there is a missing piece that we all have missing pieces that we need to train and learn and get educated on. And translation is a very difficult one. You almost need it between operational technology and IT to understand some of what you need. If you're, you know, on the operational IT side and you want to talk to IT about what you need, you have to speak their language a bit as well, right? There's all of this required to drive an understanding for leadership to want to get behind it. They got to know what's in it for them. It's a WIFM, right? That's just how this works. And I want to pivot this kind of quickly on you here, because the opposite is true as well. What I came across during this process was the AEC industry has been very closed off from sharing information and sharing data inside of the organization and externally. And that's been a huge issue. And in my process, I had a Joseph Lanzel from a sheet metal contractor that talked about his own journey from holding everything close to sharing a little to now being in this wide open, we share it all environment. Talk about that transition and the challenges that you face, and maybe some of the experiences where it's been successful in other industries or this one as well.
Look, I mean, this is we could talk about this one for hours, right? And I've seen, you know, the full range from organizations that are extremely closed down, extremely parsimonious about kind of which data you can access and where, to ones I actually had, like a CIO one time tell me, we don't care about governance. Like, we don't have anything secret here. And we'll let anybody access anything, which obviously is demonstrably not the case. But the foundation of being able to collaborate is information sharing, right? I mean, this and AEC is all about collaboration, whether it's within the firm, you know, with your partners, with your clients. It is about sharing easily, sharing effectively, and sharing securely, right? But the challenge is, the fundamental key to success here is being able to really understand that you have a secure foundation that you can share on top of, right? So a lot of companies, and I'll explain what I mean by that, right? So a lot of the companies that we work with in AEC specifically use what I call security through obscurity, right? They have the data everywhere. In theory, anybody can access it if they can find it, right? And, you know, that potentially might have been successful in the past, but these days, if you're thinking about AI of any kind, that is no longer even a remote option, right? Like, because the system will find the data and will surface the data, and that'll be the end of it, right? So knowing that you have a secure layer of governance where folks, and you thought through kind of the implications of what am I giving people? Are they getting the right information that they need? Are they being limited from accessing information that is sensitive? And by the way, sometimes this access is conditional. It's context relevant, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe I want somebody within the company to be able to access that content, but not share it external because it's got some sensitive information. Maybe it's got my pricing. Maybe it's got some competitive data, right? So how do I do all of that? I think is foundational to the success around collaboration, successful collaboration, I'll say. Right. And again, especially now with everybody, with boards and leadership pressing down on IT with respect to AI initiatives, this becomes even more central to the whole notion of how it is that these initiatives can be successful. Right. Without the governance, there is no secure collaboration and sharing, and there's no successful AI implementation at scale. You kind of got me off on a soapbox here a little bit with that question. It's one I get often.
I know, I love the soapbox. That's why we brought you on, Ronan. Like the security through obscurity, I've been saying since I got into the industry, and I've been telling them since, if you have an IP address, which was back in the day, then you weren't obscure. You had a front door and you were leaving it wide open. And this AI, and this is not a story about any of Ronan or his team, but I heard recently a group that turned on AI Copilot inside the organization and did not have that secure foundation. And you were able to ask the data and find out, well, what the leadership in the organization was making, along with a lot of other sensitive information inside of the organization. So,
yeah,
you know,
common example. Yeah,
it's just a common example, and it's not obscure anymore because little AI bots, they don't care. If they're allowed to go, they're going to go and they're going to look, which is counterpoint what we want, right? Part of what we want is if you have that governance, if you have that secure foundation, you do want to then have a strategy of using these new tools coming out to find information and to gather and find patterns in information and other workflows that we want to make faster, better, easier. But ultimately, first, it has to start with a culture wanting to get there, but also tempering that culture with the tools and techniques. And this is where operational technology and IT need to work together to achieve that, because then they both are going to get to the business outcome that we want. And ultimately, that's what the leaders in the industry, and I think to joke with the stagnation at the opening of this, is it's really because of one or the other not being aligned, is stagnating. And it's why you've seen this. And I want you to talk a little bit about where you've seen, because you argued with me on the beginning about stagnation, and I'm calling you out on it because it was fun, because what you're seeing and what you said was adoption and innovation and the change, it's there. It's just not evenly distributed.
Yeah.
There's these pockets of excellence. Talk about what those pockets of excellence look like to you.
So look, I mean, in Silicon Valley, there's this famous saying that says the future is already here. It's just not evenly distributed. It's exactly the same thing with respect to IT in AEC, right? So there's a lot of technology adoption. I mean, the example that I gave before we started the recording here is we've got, if you went back 25 years and looked at AEC companies, the difference is night and day, right? However, the reason technology is not kind of reaching its full potential in terms of really transforming the businesses, really driving productivity and competitive advantages, is this adoption issue. It's the change management, right? And look, I mean, I'll give one specific example, right? So one of the things that Ignite does phenomenally well is that we've got this ability to function as a Mac drive, right? So a lot of our customers kind of use Ignite, and Ignite to their end users look like a map drive. It's really easy to adopt. They don't have to think about it. They don't have to train anybody. But there's all these other powerful tools that are there. They're at your disposal. You're paying for them. A lot of organizations never get to them because they can't get over the hump of change management, getting their organization to say, hey, you know, we've got this map drive. That's great. Let's also use this additional access point, maybe on the mobile phone, maybe on the web, to do all these dramatically powerful things that are going to make our operations better, right? So it's not just a question about technology. It's also a question about bringing the organization along. It's about being able to speak to the people at eye level, kind of making sure that they see the real value in what you're trying to offer them. It's not just change for change's sake. That never works, right? It's about getting people to understand why it is that it's in their interest to do what you're proposing here, right? And that really goes to the partnership with the business side of the organization. It's not just an IT thing. It's how do we grow the business? You need some leadership on the operations side to really buy into this notion as well.
So you nailed a couple of things there. What I like about the mimicking of the map drive is for many people, change is hard and it can be scary. So a simple switch where the technology in the background has changed dramatically from what it was before, but the experience currently is the same. You institute and get it running the way you want. And then from there, you can use and understand as a team, whether you're on the operations side, which is usually who starts to think about this and works with the IT side, that you can identify other core problems that can present themselves where you can say, okay, you know that map drive you're using? You're like, listen, you got to share with these trade contractors, and you've got to, make sure that this is available to everybody, and you want them doing these things. Okay, we can do that. Let me show you how we'll do that and expand and continue to grow and create solutions to business problems where you start speaking their language, but using a technology that if you had waited and used the classic map drive and then tried to solve that problem, it's a very difficult change process. So yeah. I like the sneakiness of it. But the problem is we're too busy being busy a lot of the time. So we do the switch out and then we walk away. And we forget that we have to do continuous improvement and we have to continuously access those kinds of things to push the company forward, solve more problems. You got me on my soapbox now because this is my favorite part of... it's switching out little things, introducing the change, making them realize they're already comfortable using it. Now, what else can we do with it?
Now, let me give you another example here. So everybody's favorite topic, AI, right? So AI is such a huge thing. And we get CIOs coming in the door every day now saying, hey, my board's calling, my CIO is calling me. They want us to implement AI. And we go, okay, what is it that you want to do? And they say, I don't know. Like the problem is it's such a broad blanket that you could put pretty much anything into it. So one of the things that we're trying to do to help our customers is to visualize specific use cases that they can take and then they can get adoption for, right? So to your point regarding change management, how do I get away from this? Like, hey, I switched out the back end. Now here's a specific use case that you can glum onto and kind of, be successful with. So things like if we're talking about spec documents, how do we use AI to parse those out, for example, or contracts? If I've got contracts, how do I get AI to do whatever, right? Or code books. If I have, I'm creating new drawings. I want to make sure I'm within code. How do I get that to be successful, right? And the advantage of picking these very specific use cases, very specific applications, is that you can go to a well-defined group of individuals and talk to them about the benefits that they themselves will get immediately from adopting the technology, right? And it really is, technology adoption is about, value, immediate value for the end user. And that's what we're trying to do, translating kind of this big blanket statement of AI into small, well-parsed specific applications that CIOs can take and implement one at a time for specific user groups, right? So that's kind of how we're trying to get over some of that complexity.
I strongly appreciate it because I've been out on the road a lot and I get that same question. And my first answer is like, what should my AI strategy be? AI is not a strategy. It is a tool. You run a business. You have business outcomes and business strategies that then AI and the toolset can help you with. Just like you said, identifying very specific problems and applying where applicable and where it will actually work, right? There's limits to this technology. There's limits to what it can do today. Those are going to change dramatically tomorrow. But limiting it and creating it as another one of your tools in your tool chest to utilize, but to solve those problems, that's the approach that's required. Where can we speed things up? Where can we create extra checks and balances? Where can we do those things to advance our business? What's our business goal? I don't know. Where's our business problems? And you hit my favorite one. I despise ROI to the nth degree. I want to replace it with time to value. From the time you have the problem to the time you identify the solution, when do you get the value out of that solution? That is a far better equation to me than what's my return on investment? Because I can spend hours trying to give you that. But if you don't value what I'm giving you, what does it really matter?
Yeah. Yeah. There's two other kind of things that I think are really critical. Like when you get asked that question about like, what should my AI strategy be? My favorite response to that is, first of all, is your data in order? Right? Do you have the data in a specific location, in one location? Is it properly governed? Is it properly tagged to kind of get things done? Otherwise, you know, to the point we were making earlier, you're going to get a lot of issues if you try to implement AI without that. The second thing I'll say to that, and that I think is a generic statement that's kind of worth making specifically in AEC, your data is worth gold. Like the data of an organization is the value of the organization. And there are some solutions, some capabilities out there that do not guarantee the privacy and ownership of that data. They'll train their models based on your data and so forth. I am getting so many questions from IT leadership in the industry about, you know, will you protect the data and the integrity of that data? And is it ours alone? And like, if your vendor does not guarantee you that expressly and explicitly, you should kind of think about that option very seriously. It's pretty risky.
You like those longer conversations. I try to avoid the data governance because then it goes into a lot deeper than I tend to currently as I'm running through the world and going from place to place. But you're absolutely correct. It is a core component of where's your data? Do you have it all? The other one that I love to just bring up to people is, listen, it's not just that you have data. It's that you have an entirety representation of your data. What do I mean by that? Okay, let's say you're using a Procore and an Ignite and, you know, a document crunch, right? And you're using that on 70% of your jobs. But over here, you have this group of what you consider like high performers or specials, and they're putting things in Excel and Smartsheet and PDFs and not gathered. You take that 70%, make a decision. You might lack the 30% of the most valuable information about your business. So it's not just that you have it. It's that you have it in its entirety that shows your entire business. And then there's far more, you know, you should be segmenting, right? If you're building data centers and you're building lab facilities and you're building EV battery factories, those are all different. You're doing Amazon warehouses, whatever it might be, Sam's Clubs out there. They're all different data sets. And you need to be able to ask the questions of them and understand all that security and all those things that you're talking about, but also then be able to trust that you have it all. It's a big undertaking. But to your point, like to go back to what CIOs, CTOs, and others in operational technology should be asking is, you know, what's our goal with this data? Right? Data, you said it, it's the next oil, right? It's the raw material that we need. But oil can be made into a lot of things. It can be diesel. It can be a lubricant. It could be gasoline. So it can be anything. You have to define what you want it to be and then refine it to get to there. So awesome time. What I do want, and I didn't want to focus too much on it, but there are some clear and present dangers right now in the industry outside of just, you know, consistent change management, et cetera. there are changing IT and security rules. And, you know, what I love about Ignite and the partnerships I've had with you guys over the years is, you know, you've released things about cyber attacks and ransomware and, you know, focusing on CMMC compliance. So talk a little bit about those things and why partnering with your vendors is an important piece to this entirety.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I can't tell you how many calls we unfortunately get from folks the day after a ransomware attack. And, you know, a lot of the times, you know, whoever's calling will say, look, I mean, we thought we were protected. We're not, in fact. And what I tell people is it's not just whether you're protected. It's about how long will it take you to come back online, right? So there's security risks like that. There's issues of insider threat, you know, individuals kind of leaving the job, trying to take customer lists and pricing and so forth with them. There's compliance risk. You know, customers all over the world have issues with data residency, whether it's in Canada or in Germany or elsewhere in the world or in the Middle East for that matter. So all of these things kind of come into play at once. There's also compliance issues like CMMC, as you mentioned, or FedRAMP, or, you know, Building Safety Act in the UK. And all of these things require a lot of kind of record keeping, require a lot of controls. Those things can be pretty challenging in AEC specifically because AEC is not a very tightly regulated industry compared to some of the others that we operate in, right? So compliance is definitely a priority, but the expertise might not necessarily be there for that. And so the foundation for everything that we do has to do with security. So first of all, it's guaranteeing the integrity of your data. We have our own version of the Hippocratic Oath, which is, you know, first lose no data, right? So make sure the data itself is protected, then making sure that the access to the data is correctly managed. But also things like, you know, how do you know if one of your employees is trying to take data away, improperly exfiltrate the data? We have ways to guard against that. And making it all simple and transparent to the user so you don't lock down the system because of fear, right? Again, we talked before about how collaboration is the foundation for productivity. So how do you strike the right balance between being successful from a security perspective and then being successful from a business perspective? That's something that we work very closely with our customers to address. And we've got customers that are, you know, DOD, you know, contractors, some folks working on nuclear energy and so forth. So very sensitive types of data. And, you know, it's all something that depending on the level of sensitivity, the level of security that you're trying to hit, we can help you with that.
Yeah. And that's the beauty of it, is it's understanding, like, a lot of you, I want you to know, like, I'm not trying to scare you with CMMC, but it's going to be a reason you win or don't win work. So as I'm talking to IT and operational technology folks, it's like, listen, look out ahead and realize there are jobs you will not win if you cannot prove that compliance.
Forget will not win, Jeff. You won't be able to bid.
You won't even be able to bid. Yeah.
And one of the challenges for that is, first of all, the deadline is coming up, right? It's pretty close. And this is not something you turn on in a day. Like, there's
an office
to it. It's, so I'm told. it's a process. It takes months. The audits can be time consuming. A lot of folks are a little lax about their progress in this direction so far.
And it will be a differentiator. So that's the other thing, is if you're out there thinking about why should I right now? Well, because we're always in construction looking for a differentiator. We're always looking for that little thing to push us ahead. Well, your maturity in that respect, not only will it help you win that work, but the foundation that you build to do that allows you to execute on a lot of the other things we've talked about today and really truly power your organization. So I want to let everybody know where to find you, Ronan. I could go on for hours with you. I think we'll probably sit down and do this again in the future, because I'm going to be continuing this research, continuing to bring back people and new information that I'm getting as I'm out on the road. And I just love sitting down with you. So where can people go find out a little bit more, and what's your final thoughts for them on the way out?
Yeah. So you can find me either on LinkedIn or ignite.com. Ignite, of course, is spelled with the most number of vowels you can think of, but, We, you know, in terms of parting thoughts, look, I mean, the next few years are going to be transformational in the industry, as in many other industries. And it's going to be centered around kind of how you manage your data, how you work across different parts of the organization, how you define your goals and targets, and ultimately how you execute, right? And there's a lot to be done. There's a lot to be done, and it's how you go about doing it that's going to really, I guess, differentiate between the winners and the losers here. Of course, we at Ignite kind of specialize in all things AEC, so we'd love to talk to anybody, even if it's just exchanging some ideas. Happy to do it at any time. And yeah, well, I really appreciate you having me.
Anytime, and that's what I love about the team and the organization. I sit down and we geek out on a lot of these things, and I always come out with something new. So I appreciate you, and there'll be links to everybody in the show. And as we're sharing it out, we'll make sure we tag Ronan and everyone. Thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Ronan Vengosh. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to the show, visit thecontechcrew.com. This is the Contech Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.